I don't know if you had the time to print out the notes. I will have more to give you this week. Also, I should give you a copy of my manuscript, The Theory of Quasi-Categories 1. But it's very thick, and I was thinking that I better wait a little bit because you may be discouraged by the by the size. The good thing about these notes is that I don't have to follow the order of the proof. In other words, sometimes I say, well, this is true in the statement at the very beginning, and it looks like this is something I can prove in the first chapters or two of the book, but no, it come at last. The point is that since this is an overview, I don't have to follow exactly the order of the proof. This is really the way I understand the subject myself. And I would love to be able to prove everything in this order I just gave you, but at the moment I don't know. But maybe someone or you will find nice proof of some of these statements, and the exposition will get better. Okay, I think it's time that I tell you about homotopy. Well, okay, there are various subjects here. Yeah, maybe I should tell you a little bit about join and slice. So this is section 9 in the notes. Join is for join, like join of topological spaces, except that join exists for not only topological space but also for posets, categories, and also semi-set sets. So I will very rapidly describe these operations. Joins of posets Well, usually it's called the ordinal sum, and is denoted P plus Q. I think everybody knows the ordinal sum. You have two posets, P and Q, and you take the disjoint union, and you declare that every element of P is smaller than every element of Q. So, for every X in P, for every Y in Q, you have that X is smaller than Y. And otherwise, the order is just the order on P and the order of Q. It's called the ordinal sum. This operation, I think, was first described by Cantor. This is when you want to add ordinal numbers, this is the way you do it. For joins of categories, if you have A and B, two categories, then you can construct A star B, let's call it C, as follow. The objects of C, that's the object of A, disjoint object of B, C of XY is equal to A of XY if x and y are in the objects of A. B of x, y is x, y are the objects of B. And one arrow if x is in A and y is in B, empty otherwise. Okay, and composition is obvious. I'm going to describe the join of semi-sized sets now. I want to say that there is only one arrow. I could write, for example, a pair XY, right?
Okay.
To say that there's an arrow from X to Y. Okay. So, it's like A, B, and between any object of X and any object of Y, there is an arrow. And otherwise, you have the usual arrows between the objects of B and the object of Y. And you want, when you want to compose, there is only one choice. The joint of semi-sized set is a little bit complicated to describe. A little bit more than that. It's a bit annoying. I could describe it by a formula. I have two semi-sized sets. I can describe the formula. Okay. Now, I'm going to do that, but this is not very satisfactory. But anyway, I can do that. I have to give you the n simplices of A star B. So that's going to be AM, disjointion sum AM, disjoint union I plus 1 plus J equal N of AI times BJ. That's one way of describing the joint of two semi-sized sets. Of course, I'm telling you nothing about the phase and degeneracy operators if I write such a formula, but you can figure it out in principle. The idea here is that if you have two semi-sized sets and you want to consider a simplex in there, in the joint, well, the joint should have somehow the same picture. Each time you have a simplex here, and each time you have another simplex here, well, you can form the joint of these two simplices, because these two simplices are posets after all. Recall that delta n, okay, so the joint of delta n and delta m is really the join of n star m, of n and m. I mean, this is a category, if you like. This is another category. You can take the join, that's a category, and take its nerve, okay, if you like. Well, really, it's delta n plus m plus 1. This formula is very simple, but it does not say much about the phase and degeneracy operators, but you can figure it out. So, given a simplex, let's say, of dimension I in B, and a simplex of dimension J in B, then you can take the join, and this is giving you a simplex of dimension I plus 1 plus J, which is a simplex of dimension N. So this explains this part. And what about this part? Well, it's because you can also take just a simplex in A or a simplex in B, right? So this formula looks clear enough, but there are other ways of describing the join, and I will very shortly tell you describe this. You may go through augmented simplicial sets. So let me call write delta plus for the category of finite ordinals. So I write, let's say, n bar for the ordinal 1 to n with n points, okay? So the objects are the n bar, okay? So really, delta plus is the same as 0, the nth ordinal, actually star delta. I mean, here this is a category with one point. You really had an initial vertex to, I mean, if I take the join with a category with a single point, it's like adding a new object to B and making it initial. So this is actually adding a new object to delta and making it initial, and that's the NT ordinal. Now, an augmented simplicial set is a functor from X, from delta plus to set, to the category of set, contravariant functor. So it has an X0, an X1, and it's a contravariant functor. You have X2, and you will have two maps here, X3. And you may think of this as X1, if you like, in the usual simplicial set notation, and then this will be X minus 1. So this is why it's called augmented simplicial set. I'm sorry? Oh, right. Thank you. That's precisely the point of this observation. Right. So it's called augmented simplicial set. But this notation, when you work with augmented simplicial set, this notation is sometimes more convenient. The reason is that there is on the finite ordinal, you have the ordinal sum, a finite ordinal, the ordinal sum, and M goes to N plus M, and there is clearly a tensor product. This is a tensor product on the Now, if you have a monoidal category and you take precise on this monoidal category, well, the category of precise has an induced tensor product. So it means that there will be an induced tensor product on augmented simplicial set, which I write like this. The category of augmented simplicial set which you may call it the join of simplicial set. Now this is a nice tensor product in a sense that it has all the good property. it is a closed monoidal structure, etc. And now you have the very nice formula that that x tensor y of n is really, and you check it, that's I plus j equal n of xi times yj. This is a very familiar formula for multiplying polynomials, right? That's the way you compute the join of two augmented simplicial sets. So now there is an inclusion of delta into delta plus, which I call I, and it's going to give rise to a functor, restriction functor. Let's say I star. You take an augmented simplicial set and you chop off the augmentation, and you get there. And then there is a left adjoint and a right adjoint. Now, the both left and right adjoint are fully faithful, so there are two ways actually to take a simplicial set and produce an augmented simplicial set from it. And we are going to choose I lower star. Our I lower star of a simplicial set A is A equipped with the trigonal augmentation. The trigonal augmentation that takes A0 and just take 1 for A minus 1, okay? And the rest is just the same, right? I won't describe I lower shriek, but that's the way I want to view a simplicial set as an augmented simplicial set. Now, if you do this identification, if you identify S with a subcategory of S plus, you discover that here that x star zero is x zero times y zero. Okay. So, in other words, if the augmentation is 1, if x0 is 1 and y0 is 1, then the join has 1 as augmentation. And that means that this subcategory S, using I lower star as the inclusion, is actually closed on the tensor product. So that's giving you an induced tensor product on S, and that's it. That defines the join of simplicial set. And this formula, of course, is an immediate consequence of this one, and with the fact that this is really an n plus 1, this is an n plus 1, and there is a minus 1, which is 1 here, right? There is a factor which seems to be missing. It's multiplying by 1, right? It's the x0 and the y0, if you like, which are 1. The bad news here is that the unit object, I said nothing about the unit object, the unit object here is zero. I mean, zero, the representable zero. I mean, by unit dilemma, you have the unit object of delta plus, and it goes into here, and that's zero. Now, zero is an augmented simplicial set in the sense that it's the empty simplicial set augmented by 1. Zero is not the be careful. Zero is simply the empty simplicial set augmented by 1. So it's not empty as an augmented simplicial set, but it's empty as a simplicial set. Okay? And here you have that x star 0 is x star. Okay, that's because it's 0 is a unit. But here, you will have, on this side, A star empty set equal A, which of course you would like for a join operation. In other words, the empty set is the unit for the join operation. Now, it looks very nice, but we are in serious trouble because it means that the star operation does not have a right adjoint. So, it is not closed. It's a monoidal category. The unit object is the empty set, but it cannot be closed. Because remember that a left adjoint, like a tensor product with a fixed thing, is always preserving initial object. A left adjoint is preserving colimits, right? And this functor is not a left adjoint because otherwise it would take the initial object to the initial object. Okay, and which is clearly false because this is A, right? So it's a very natural example of a monoidal category which is not closed. And curiously, you need very little to make it closed. You have to go to augmented Semmelweis set, and then it becomes closed, because, right? However, I decided not to do that because I don't like the idea of developing the homotopy theory of augmented Semmelweis sets. I could, but okay. I want to do things more directly. Okay, so there is another way of making this close in some sense. What happened is that there is always a canonical inclusion of A union B into A star B. There's a natural inclusion of the coproduct of A and B into their join. And because of that, you may consider that this functor from S to S goes into S extending A, or below A, in the sense that it takes X to the inclusion of A into A star X. Okay? It's just a functor. You use the fact that A is included in A star X to modify a little bit the target of this functor. Normally, it's just a functor from S to S, but if you fix A, it's a functor like that. Now, this functor has a right adjoint. This functor. As a right adjoint. And the right adjoint is going to take a map, extend a map, let's say, and produce some Semmelweis set which I'm going to write X over T. Okay, I'm going to be a bit more precise about X. So it takes a map and produces Semmelweis set, right? Which I write X slash T. Okay, so let me describe this Semmelweis set a bit more closely. Well, clearly, by adjointness, you need to know what are the simplices of that. Well, a simplex of this simplicial set, this mysterious simplicial set, will be simply the same thing as, by adjointness, a map from, am I doing it right? From A star, I hope I put the slash on the right side. I have to check this out. From A star delta N into X. It's the same thing as a map which extend, because we have already a given map, so there's a restriction, not an arbitrary map. There is an inclusion here which extend T. So a map here is the same thing as a map here which extend the map T which is given, right? So that's defining the simplices of A star delta N. Now I have been working on that for years and I just can't remember if I'm slashing on the right or on the left. So I that should be obvious, but I think I should have so where is, I have to check this out because I don't want to 17 No. My God. 18. Okay. What am I doing? Yeah. That should be okay. I think it's okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's okay. Okay, one way to remember, now, okay, one way to remember that. You see, the connection between these two things is that you sort of divide by A on the right, on the left-hand side to cancel it. You divide by A. But instead of dividing by A, it's really T. So, you see, you take this thing here, and you divide out on the left by A, and you move A by division, but you actually write T instead of A. Okay, that's the idea. Okay. Now, there is a similar construction on the other side. There is also a simplicial set X over T. And this time, delta N star A to X, and you have A, the inclusion, and you have T. So there is a 1-1 correspondence. Really, a simplex here is the same thing as a map which extends T along this inclusion. This is never an equality, it's always strict, actually, except if A is empty. Right. No, it's always strict, yeah. Okay, so that's the division on the other side. So let me give you an example of that, because this is a familiar operation. Suppose that A is a category and let's say A is an object of A. And then you are familiar with the construction of the slice category A over A and A over A, right? Right? So that's a special case of that. Here we take the A as a functor, as a map from A to A. And what it says is that if you want to have a simplex in the slice category, right? Okay, so if I want to understand what is a simplex in the slice category, it's the same thing as a simplex from 1 star delta n into A, which extend what you have already. So that's the zero inclusion, and that's A. Right? So you check it out. Yeah, right. It's easy to. Is it clear? Yeah. Okay. So let's go a little bit further. I mean, because right now I have defined this slice not only when A is a single, it's reduced to a point, but for an arbitrary simplicial set, and you may wonder what this is good for. Well, let's look a little bit at the vertices of this object. Okay, so what is a vertex of T over X? Well, it's going to be a map which extends, A star 1, which extends the given map. So you have the inclusion, and that's going to be really a map like that. Now, A star 1 is a cone on A. Right? A star 1. It's I call it the inductive cone. You have A, you add a new object to A on the right. And actually you're adding a terminal object, so to speak. Well, if A is a category, you're actually augmenting A with a terminal object. So this is called inductive cone. Inductive cone, because when you take a colimit of a diagram, you are actually constructing a universal inductive cone, right? And of course, there is also a projective cone, which is 1 star A, okay? And here, what this thing is saying is that you have a diagram. You should think of T as a sort of diagram. So T is a diagram indexed by A in X. T is a diagram indexed by A in X, view it as a sort of category, if you like. Okay, so you have this picture. You have X, and you have an indexing set, and you have a map T mapping to A. Okay? Now, what this bisection is saying is that if you make up an inductive cone, an abstract inductive cone here on A, right? So that's A star 1, that's A. That A star 1 is the bigger thing. Okay? And if you look at the maps extending A star T, the maps extending T, that's exactly here. So these maps are clearly the cones extending the diagram T in X. So the conclusion is that a point of X over T is a cone extending the diagram T. A cone in X extending the diagram T. And we are going to use this construction for the theory of homotopy limits and limits, because really, if we want to do a theory of limits, it's about cones and universal cones. And the slicing construction plays an important role in the theory of limits in quasi-categories. Okay. Okay, now we can go to the next something, homotopy factorization system. So that's going to be 10. Well, no, I'm sorry, I start with 7, which is homotopy factorization system in CAP. Anyway, I put these two things together. System. So what is so you have to have a model category E C W F, a model category. And an homotopy factorization system is a pair. Pair of classes of maps. And I'm going to put the axioms on the pair. Okay, the first axiom is that A and B are invariant under weak equivalences. So, what does it mean? It means that if you have a commutative square, U prime, B prime, let's say A and B, and with A and B in W, okay, so you have a commutative square where the horizontal maps are weak equivalences. U is in the class A if and only if U prime is in the class A. That means that the class A is invariant under weak equivalence, and similarly for B. So that's the first condition. The second condition is that the pair A intersection E C F intersection C B intersection E C F intersection F is a weak factorization system. On ECF. So ECF is the subcategory of fabrant cofabrant object, cofabrant fabrant subcategory of fabrant cofabrant objects. So, in other words, if you restrict the class A to fabrant to cofabrant object, the nice objects of the moral category. And you moreover restrict to the cofabrant arrows in A. Okay? So you take only the arrows in A which are cofabrant and also between fabrant cofabrant objects. And you do the same for B, but restricting with the fabrant, you get a weak factorization system. Okay. It's not the... there's another axiom. In fact, two others. A has the right cancellation property. So that means that if you have U, V in A and U in A, then V is in A. Okay? And 4, B has the left cancellation property. It turns out that 3 and 4 are actually equivalent in the presence of the others axioms, right? So you can prove 3 from 4 and 4 from 3, so they are equivalent. Okay, now I should give you example. Yes? Sorry? Okay. A weak factorization system, let's say AB, means means two things. One, A and B contains the isomorphism, and two, A is the left orthogonal, not orthogonal, but A is the class of map having the left lifting property with respect to B, and B is the class of map having the right lifting property with respect to A. I mean, from that you get a lot of other properties like A is closed under composition, co-base change, and etc. That's what a weak factorization system is. So in a model, in a Quillen model category, you have two of them, right? Two weak factorization system. Okay. Okay, so I should give you an example of a multiple factorization system. There are many examples. Maybe I should start with some topological examples, because since homotopy factorization system originally came from topology, Bos field, I mean, it's not the definitions of Bos field. I'm not sure that Bos field has an abstract definition of what an homotopy factorization system is. But he saw that such something like that was coming out from his work on localization theory. But he did not write axioms, and so that's my little contribution to this theory of homotopy factorization system, is that I actually wrote the axioms and I tried to develop an abstract theory of it. And I have many good reasons to believe that these axioms are the correct one. In many situations, something stronger is happening. So I call AB is said to be uniform if the pair A intersection C and B intersection F is a Wii factorization system on E. This is somehow stronger than that. You can show that if this is true, then this is true. In other words, you don't have to restrict to the cofabrant-fabrant objects. You already have a factorization system on your category. As long as you take the maps in A, which are cofabrant, and the maps in B, which are fabrant. Not every weak factorization system is uniform. We will see important examples where the factorization system is not uniform. So let me give you a topological example first. So I'm now example something like 10.7 or 10. Let's say. Let me start with 10.8 in your notes. A is the class of zero connected maps. A map is zero connected if its homotopy fiber are connected, right? I'm sorry?
In which category
are we? We are in S. So in the category of surfaces set. Okay. So this notion is clearly invariant under weak homotopy equivalence, because we are taking the homotopy fiber of a map, and it's well known that the homotopy fiber of a map are well defined in the homotopy category. So this is the class A. And what is the class B? I said 10.8, right. Okay. B is the class of homotopically discrete maps. So again, to be homotopically discrete means that the homotopy fibers are equivalent to discrete are topological or discrete semi-precise sets. So that's a classical notion again, and this is clearly invariant under weak equivalence. And this system is uniform. I'm sorry? Homotopically discrete mean that the homotopy fibers are discrete, homotopically discrete, that is equivalent to discrete semi-cell object. And You can do the same thing 10-9. You fix n greater than minus 1. So you can actually look at minus 1 connected and etc. So in this case, you say that A, the class of n connected maps, and B is the class of n co-connected . So maybe I should just remind you of what these things mean. A simplicial set X is N connected. If X is different from E, and pi I X is 1 for every I between 0 and 1 and N, and every X in X. So that's one way of defining n-connected simplicial object. For n equal to minus 1, that means that X is not empty. That's the only conditions that remain. So a map is n connected if it's a multiply fibers are n connected. So in particular, the homotopy fibers must be non-empty. And now a simplicial set X is n object, or maybe an n type, if this for every I greater than n and every X in X. So that could be said also n co-connected rather than n object, or an n type. And a map is n co-connected if its multiply fibers are co-connected. If its multiply fibers are n objects. Right. So that's a kind of familiar homotopy factorization system connected to Postnikov tower. In fact, I think Bosfield mentioned it as an example of homotopy factorization system in his paper. He has a paper in 1974 or something like that in a journal of pure and applied algebra. And that's an example. Okay. Now, these are topological examples, and there are many more homotopy factorization systems, and I will just give you one very small example to show you why it's interesting for category theory and also for the theory of quasi-categories. But it's a very small example, but at least gives you an idea. So in cat equivalence, so we know that cat is a model category. You take for A the category, not the category, the class of essentially surjective functors, and B the class of fully faithful. One of the nice thing about, I will give you another example and I will be finished today. One of the nice thing about a multiple factorization system is that if you specify one of the class, the other class is determined. I mean, if you want to specify in a multiple factorization system, you just need to say, well, the multiple factorization system for which, let's say, the left class is this or that. Now, it's very easy to define the notions of essentially subjective map in S. So in S, a map is said to be essentially subjective if tau zero of U, if the map from tau zero to tau zero of B is surjective. Equivalently, you could say that the map is essentially surjective if tau one of U, which is a functor, is an essentially surjective functor. That's one way of saying, recalling what a map. Now, we shall see that there is an homotopy factorization system in S for which the left class is the class of essentially surjective maps. And of course, a map in the right class is said to be fully faithful. Okay? So that's one way of describing fully faithful maps. And this principle, we will use it, for example, to define Dwyer-Kahn localization. Dwyer-Kahn localization can be defined as easily. There is a notion of a conservative map, and the other class is Dwyer-Kahn localization or quasi-localization, whatever. So that's a machinery to specify very precisely and very generally very important classes of maps. But I think I need to stop here. Thank you.